Mendes for goal! And finishes off the PSG victory!
Mendes est lancé, Nuno Mendes habite, Nuno Mendes passe devant Cuadrado, le tir! Oh, il est bon celui-là! Le but de Nuno Mendes!
Oh, what a world-class save from Gianluigi Donnarumma!
Magnifique! Vitinha, la finition clinique!
Hello and welcome to PSG Review, also known as the show fast approaching the new season proper, just like our team currently in Japan on a preseason tour, also known as the show hopefully seeing some light at the end of the Mbappe tunnel which has taken over this summer, entirely and most certainly. And today in this show we talk about that and much, much more with a journalist and a football expert, Lee Davy. My name is Mikko, absolutely delightful to have you with me today, and feel free to check me out online where you find me at PSG Helsinki on Instagram and Twitter, as I like to call it, and you can also of course email me psghelsinki@gmail.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe and listen. All these things are a lovely thank you to me if you enjoy the show. It won't take too much of your time or effort, but as far as the algorithms are taking over, that's a nice way to nudge them to the desired direction, and many thanks to you, of course, if you had done any of these things. So just listening, that's always great. A lot to talk about in this episode, and I promise that I have some help today from Lee Davy. Lee is a journalist, a writer, and a broadcaster for TalkSport and Sky Sport in the UK and Ligue 1, also making now today his second appearance here on PSG Review. Really great to have you on the show again. How has the summer been for you?
Weather-wise, very, very bad over here. But you know the UK.
Yes.
You've lived here. You know what we get here.
I know.
But no. But very, very nice. Spend time with the family. So relaxing. But nice. Always nice keeping up to date with all things PSG, as you know, which is a job in itself.
It is a really a job in itself. The uncertainty, all of that is happening. We know this. And today, as we are recording now, today the Spanish goalkeeper Arnau Tenas has joined us on a free transfer from Barcelona. That is sort of brand new information that we have. Of course, there were some rumors and murmurs around that, and he will undoubtedly, I suppose, be the second keeper of the Donnarumma, which means that we are more than likely to say goodbye to Keylor Navas, which is a bit of a melancholic thing, I think, for me at least, and we continue, of course, to also send our support to Sergio Rico as well, and hopefully he can recover fully, maybe one day to play football, certainly, hopefully, at least to have a good life ahead of him. Do you know much about Arnau Tenas, or have you got any other thoughts on our goalkeeper situation, since this is something that is sort of like fresh from the press?
Yeah, he's. I'll be completely honest. He's a new goalkeeper for me, not somebody that I've seen in action. I think it's a case of trusting the manager on this one. He obviously sees him as a highly rated goalkeeper. He's obviously very tender age, so he's got his best years ahead of him, you would expect. And let's see what he brings to us. Who knows? He could be thrown into the limelight. We don't know what's around the corner. It could be injuries or suspensions. We know that Donnarumma is all obviously going to be the club's number one this season, but it's always good to have somebody who's ready, waiting, you know, to jump straight in when needed. So I'm sure we'll start to find out a lot more about him, you know, over the coming weeks and months. And welcome him to the club. Obviously, a new signing, and hopefully, you know, he can help this club move on to bigger and better things over the course of the season. Obviously, you know, goalkeeper position, I think we know that Donnarumma is our number one. You know, as you quite rightly said at the start, it does now spell the end for Keylor Navas, which is a real sad one for me, because when he signed a few years ago, it almost felt like we'd finally solved that goalkeeping issue that we'd had for so many years, where there were so many people that we've always been split on our goalkeepers, whether it was Areola, Kevin Trapp, you know, even before that, Sirigu, and nobody, we've never kind of had everybody on the same page when it's come to goalkeepers at the club, not for a while anyway. And it felt like everybody was universally kind of settled on Navas. He was the man, and you know, he performed really admirably. And obviously, the club brought in Donnarumma, and that was the end of Navas, really. That was the end of the situation, which is, you know, I've got some thoughts on it. I mean, I you know, I, I would have loved Navas to have stayed as number one. I prefer Navas to Donnarumma. That's just my own personal opinion. But I understand the reasons for signing Donnarumma, because he was young. He'd just come off the back of the Euros. He was voted the best player in Euros, which happened in 2021, of course. And he was coming on a free transfer. So it almost felt like too good a deal to not take. But we welcome our new goalkeeper, and we'll see, you know, how he gets on, whether that will provide competition for Donnarumma, I don't know. But it'll be interesting viewing.
I feel like he might provide a little bit more competition. I feel like maybe there's a little bit more than maybe what they has been now, certainly last season. So hopefully that will bring something positive also out of Donnarumma, because the goalkeeper situation is very delicate also. And when they were kind of competing, Navas and Donnarumma, that one season, that didn't really work out too well. It seemed that neither one of them really got that confidence and ability for that particular season.
I think the same happened with Trapinarioli, didn't it? I think I've always felt when it comes to goalkeepers, there needs to be a hierarchy. I think there should always be a designated number one and a designated number two, and a number two that's, you know, the required ability to come in and fill in. You know, when you start putting pressure on goalkeepers, every mistake is so much, and it's just analysed so deeply, isn't it? And then it's just an area where it's not like any other place on the pitch. It's an area where confidence and self-confidence just, you know, once it's knocked or taken a hit, it's so catastrophic to a football team, and certainly a back line. So I always feel there should be a hierarchy in when it comes to goalkeepers, rather than having two competing like for positions. I just don't feel it works.
I really agree with that, and it's one of those things that a striker can miss open goals a handful of time and score one goal and everybody is celebrating that, but a goalkeeper doesn't really have that that luxury to make those mistakes. All of them are costly usually. But let's get into, I think that the big conversation for this summer has been the fact that this sort of pre-season, this whole summer has been taken as a hostage by a certain young man from Bondite, news of his insistence to stay put and collect all the remaining checks from PSG and then leaving for free. And then there was the record-breaking offer from Saudi Arabia, and now also the likely possibility that Real Madrid might be making some kind of offer to secure him already this summer. Much of it feels quite scripted to me. I feel like there's some kind of a plan, and we're just sort of like they're just playing with our emotional well-being. But what's been your experience of this whole ordeal?
Yeah, I think you probably used the right words there, ordeal. I think we've come to the point where I think universally as fans, we just want it resolved. We want an ending to this whole episode that's been dragging on for years now, for a few years, this link with Real Madrid, this flirting between Mbappe and Real Madrid. And yes, we obviously stayed and he signed a new contract. But, you know, straight away we find out it's a 2+1 instead of a 3-year deal. And then the media have a field day with it. And then, you know, it's just been constant and it's been incredibly draining. And I think sections of the media as well I think they're hoping for this to find an end as well. It's just been such a long, drawn-out process. It's been difficult to watch, because I think we forget that this is a guy who is Parisian. His brother plays for Paris Saint-Germain. His family live in the outskirts of the city. And it's just been really kind of like a difficult watch. And he's a club legend, whether anyone thinks it or not, because he's the top scorer of all time. And it's been quite sad, really, just seeing how his stock is just falling within the club. I mean, I don't know, because it's been the summer, so I'm really not sure in terms of the fan base as a whole, how people feel about him. And, you know, and I think we don't really know, because Kylian doesn't say anything. He's very quiet. And, you know, in relation to that, it's hard to kind of put your judgment on, you know, where his stance is with the whole of this. I want it resolved from my perspective. I think it will. I think tomorrow's D-Day. We are at the 31st of July, and you and I both know that it's where he will pick up his slots, pick up his loyalty bonus, is this 60 million euros. And I think that from then onwards, we will start to see some type of movement. I would anticipate something could be wrapped up within the next 10 days or so. I really think there's going to be movement this week, which is sad. But I think we all knew that this day was going to come, regardless of what's happened this summer. This day was always going to come, this move to Madrid, this, you know, this childhood dream of his. And I don't think even the most ardent PSG fan ever thought he was ever going to spend his whole career in Ligue 1 playing for PSG. And I think we accept that. And I think we're okay with that. I just would love it to end in a positive note, amicably. Because I think I said when I came on your pod in April that the door, I believe, could be open for a return. After he's won his Ballon d'Ors, after he's won his Champions Leagues, for him to actually come back and finish the job, he has to leave on good terms for that to happen, you know. And I'm just hoping that that can be worked out.
I really agree with that, and I really hope that it could happen. I hope it's not too late for that. I think that the idea that he was insisting on, that that he wants to stay the last year and then leave for free, that would be that's can't happen. Like that's just impossible, and he knows that. He surely he understands. It's not a difficult concept to grasp. Surely he knows that it's a problem for PSG, and I also agree that if he goes, you know, in the next week or two, I mean, there's not that much left of the window, and we still need to then use that money for reinforcements, maybe elsewhere, and certainly in attack, which we will talk in a bit. But I think that if he leaves and brings in a good, healthy, sizable transfer fee, I think that people can, maybe with time, people can get a little bit past that. But it's not necessarily looking massively good at the moment, and it's kind of like what I was saying, is that it has really taken over this whole summer, which was supposed to be quite a good summer of rebuilding. And I think there's been some good things that have been happening and some interesting players that have been coming, and it just feels like his friend Campos has not really been given, again, he hasn't been given like a good summer to just focus on making a best possible team. But what I wanted to ask from you also is that we know that Kylian Mbappe is very mindful of his own reputation. I mean, his personal brand and image, including image rights, like quite literally, and all that. Do you think that this summer has caused much damage to his brand, personal brand? I guess certainly, perhaps amongst us PSG fans, it could be more. But internationally, you are based in the UK. But in general, how do you think that this has been experienced by the neutrals and others?
I think in some cases, maybe. I know that the consensus of some people in the UK is that he's egotistical, he's greedy, you know, he's a drama, he likes the drama, he likes the attention. And that's very much, you know, that's very much the opinion of people here, that certainly that I've spoke to, things that I've read. You know, there may be some element of truth to that. I generally believe that Kylian Mbappe has, the best way of putting this is, lapped up the club, almost selling its soul to him from the perspective of the money, the power. I felt that last season, when he didn't sign the deal until the last game of the season, and those months leading up to it, he was almost enjoying the attention that he was building, even though, you know, it was quite serious to his supporters that, you know, that he signed, that he stayed. I think we all resigned ourselves to the fact that he was probably going to go. So when he did sign, it was such a surprise to so many of us. But I think he enjoyed that attention. He enjoyed it. You could see on his face whenever he was asked by the media, he'd give a little smirk and a little smile, and he really loved the suspense that surrounded his future. So from that perspective, I didn't particularly like that, because I think you're leaving fans that rely on you, that love you, that, you know, want to put their heart and soul into you, you're kind of leaving them hanging a little bit. And of course, it's up to him. He has to make his decisions for himself, his family, and what's best for him. But they just felt like there was a little bit of game playing last year. This year's very, very different. I think that it would have damaged him to have gone to Saudi Arabia. That would have been very, very telling. And obviously, as we know, there was some offers that came in for him. But, you know, for a guy that's holding out for his, you know, for his loyalty bonus for £60 million, for then to jump on and go to Saudi and earn, you know, absolutely just money-spinning deal, it would have been a little bit, you know, I think that would have been really telling of him, and he would have been almost painted as a mercenary, I think. And I don't think that would have been very good for his image, because his image is very important to him, as we know. He likes to portray this person who's a role model, especially for people in his country, for young people. He does a lot of tours. He's recently been to Cameroon, and, you know, he does a lot to inspire young people, and just people that kind of look up to him. So, you know, he does a lot of good, but I just, again, he's still got to leave on the right terms. He's got to leave on the right terms. He has to, because when you're a club legend, it's not just about what you do on the pitch. It's not just about scoring goals. It's about how you leave the club. Do you leave the club in a better position than you found it? You know, have you, you know, do you have good relationships with everybody? Have you, you know, do you go with the fans' blessing? Yeah, people like Angel Di Maria, Javier Pastore, still, you know, very fond, you know, really fond memories of PSG in their time, still talk about it now, and the fans still talk about them. But what we don't want is another situation like Edinson Cavani, who's, again, was a club legend, top scorer, and, you know, he really left in a, under a real cloud, and I find that really sad still, in terms of the way he left the club. So I don't want that with Kylian, and I'm still hopeful that he can go away and, you know, achieve all of his dreams of Real Madrid and come back with his reputation intact. I really hope that can happen.
Yeah, I also think that Kylian Mbappe, he's a little bit like a cat. Like, you can't really own Kylian Mbappe. You can just share space with Kylian Mbappe for the time being that he, you know, accepts to do that. And I think that it might be that Real Madrid might also find at some point that that it's been sort of painted, the story has been painted like that is his final, like, point. Like, that's where he's heading, and that's the journey. That's where his journey ends, and then that's the dream come true, and that's the childhood dream and all that stuff. But I do think that they might also, you know, find themselves having a few stressful moments. On top of that, of course, with Real, and this is no longer any of my business anymore, but he's already done the U-turn with them. So I would imagine that for them, he doesn't get that much, and they're very used to these kind of stars anyway. So if things don't go as planned, and they don't always go as planned, I mean, I don't wish him ill, but I mean, sometimes things don't go as well as they could. It can also be that the people might turn against him and demand something better.
Things will be very different for him over there. And, you know, I think you raise a really good point there, in the sense of when he goes to Real Madrid, I mean, he's obviously a huge figure at Paris Saint-Germain, but that's going to shrink very quickly at Real Madrid. There is literally nobody bigger than Real Madrid. You know, when we're talking about players, Cristiano Ronaldo, he left Karim Benzema, time for him to go too. And, you know, when it's time to go, it's time to go. Now, for him, he's going to have to fall in line. He's not going to be kept the power that he had at PSG. And that was, you know, something that I hope PSG will learn from going forward, that they won't certainly go down that route again. But I do believe that things are going to change very, very quickly. He's going to fall in line with the rest of the squad, and he will certainly know his place and his boundaries very, very quickly at that club.
I really think so also. There was this one slightly unnecessary outburst Mbappe was having, and this was actually just last time when you were in the show and we were talking about it. He was saying that this is not Kylian Saint-Germain, this is Paris Saint-Germain. So perhaps we move on a little bit from him, unless he comes up on other connection later on in the conversation. But let's talk about the signings, the transfers, the things that have been happening throughout this summer. So, of course, we have a new coach, new manager, Luis Enrique. That's something new, a little bit different profile also perhaps than what we've had before. Like I said, today there was a new what we imagine is going to be the backup goalkeeper, Arnau Tenas from Barcelona, coming in until 2026 for free. Yes. And then, of course, we have Milan Skriniar, Lucas Hernandez, because I think that the pronunciation is Spanish, Marco Asensio, Lee Kang-in, already injured. It's very on brand for PSG. And Manuel Ugarte and Shen Dur. And then, of course, quite good news for us, of course, is that Xavi Simons, signed with us, although that's not going to help us this season. He's on loan. But then in long term, I think that's very, very exciting. What's your verdict on the summer? I'm sure there's quite a lot of, like, numbers wise, there's quite a lot of transfers that have already happened, but we still expect and hope for a few more, certainly when it comes to attacking. And of course, a lot depends on this Mbappe situation, because just not financially, but also like what are the needs. How do you rate this this transfer window so far?
I do like some of the business that's been done. Definitely. I like the midfielder, Manuel Ugarte. I like him. I like Lucas Hernandez, providing he can put his injury hell behind him. I think that would be that's a really good and solid sign-in. Lee Kang-in is a really interesting one for me. I'm the little snippets that I've seen of him, he looks a real good player. And just seeing the reaction of certain journalists from who cover La Liga were just, really raving about this guy. So I've seen snippets of him, and what I've seen so far, there's a real player in him. So very much looking forward to seeing what he can do. That's a really exciting one for me. I think the one signing so far that I'm not overly joyous about, or not too excited about, is probably the best way to put it, is Marco Asensio. I'm not quite sure what he's going to bring. I'm not quite... look, he's experienced. He's used to big game matches. He's won countless honours. But I'm not quite sure what stage of his career he's at. We know he's played at Real Madrid. We know he's come on and turned games, but he's never really been able to grasp it as a starting player. I think he's finding himself now. He's out of the Madrid bubble. He's out of the Madrid shadow, and it's an opportunity for him to show what he can do on his own away from Madrid. Can he come and lift this Paris Saint-Germain team? Can he take them somewhere else, to another level? Can he give the coach something completely different to work with? I'm not overly enthused by that signing so far, but we'll see what happens. I hope, I'd love him for him to prove me wrong. Of course I would. Of course I'd want him to come good and be a fantastic signing. I think the key one that you said earlier was Xavi Simons, which is just great news for the club. I mean, if they'd have thrown that one away, then we'd have all been pulling our hair out, because, for 6 million, I think it was around about the 6 million mark, for him to come back to the club was just a no-brainer. It had to happen. Slightly disappointed that he's gone on loan, because I felt that if there was a way of holding that off a little bit, and again, me and you are not in the negotiating room, so, we don't know what Xavi Simons wanted. But I would have loved, because he signed a 4-year contract, we're going to lose one of those years because he's going to be at Leipzig. So the only thing I worry about, because this guy's a, incredible talent for the future, I just don't want to be in a position where we get 1 or 2 years out of him and then, he says, right, I'm not signing a new contract, I want to go and play in the Premier League. Because I know he's got his eye on the Premier League at some point in his career, and then we, after all of this, we get him for 1 or 2 seasons. So that's my only worry with it being a 4-year contract and 1 year going on loan. Is he... are we going to be in a position where he's going to run his contract down and say, yeah, thanks very much, PSG, but I want to go and play in the Premier League now, or I want to go and play somewhere else. So it's up to us to give him what he wants, and that's going to be latter end of the Champions League, pushing for honours, because this is a star. This, don't make no mistake, this guy is going to be a star. And I'm so pleased that, he's signed and he's come back to the club. I would have liked to have seen him this season, but it's not to be.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought, and I mean, I don't know, this is all speculation, but I thought that it could be as as simple as one of the conditions for his return was to go on loan and go somewhere where he's sort of a clear starter and sort of like take a next logical step in his career and not to sort of get into this very dramatic world of PSG, which of course he, the thing about him is that he knows Paris, he knows PSG, he knows it's the good and the bad of it. And in that way, he kind of like, it's not a surprise. But what you were saying also earlier about Marco Asensio, I really also feel the same. It could go either way. I feel like, you know, technically it could, like, he could be the next Hesse, but then he could also be kind of like the next Angel Di Maria who came to PSG after a difficult season he had in Manchester United before that. So technically it could be what you know, one or the other, maybe something in between, probably something in between. But I also don't, especially looking at our attack, how it is looking now, then it doesn't fill me with the confidence because we really have lost a lot of firepower as well as experience in our attack. I mean, now if Mbappe leaves, then we do need reinforcements. Mbappe and Messi last season combined 61 goals in all club competitions. That's a lot of goals to take away. You have to find players who can fill in, and that's not very easy. Now, there were names, there's been many names during the summer. Harry Kane was one of them that's been mentioned many times. It seems unlikely now. Atalanta's Danish striker Rasmus Højlund, he's already gone to Manchester. I think, I don't know if it's been announced, but it seems.
Yeah, I think it's close.
So that's pretty much impossible. Of course, Vlahović of Juventus, that's also been mentioned. Not too excited about that. And the one that I would really hope for is Benfica's Gonçalo Ramos. Of course, PSG was, Campos was trying to get him already last year when he would have probably been quite a lot more cheaper than he is now after a good season with Benfica. They had a good season and I think he scored also a hat-trick in the World Cup. So that kind of thing tends to push their price up a little bit. And then, of course, we have Ugo Ekitike, you know, and I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's getting a little bit of a bad reputation maybe from the last season. But first season can sometimes be very difficult. And he was behind this M&M, and all of that drama. And I think that he only really got one time last season, consistent playing time for a couple of matches. And then he scored, I think, 3 goals in 4 matches. Some point last spring, can't remember quite exactly when, but he's not a bad player, I don't think, and I think he's taking this very seriously because this is his opportunity now. Whether he's going to stay, whether he's going to be loaned out, whether they're going to try to sell him, but be that as it may, how do you look at our attacking thing? Because now we have like Marco Asensio there, and then we have of course some of these young kids. Lamina has been excellent during this preseason, but they're very young.
Yeah, I like Lamina. What I've seen of him, very bright. It makes great runs, good pace. Certainly someone that you can see being part of the first team squad at some point. Certainly, you know, as a backup more than anything. But you might, you know, you get clubs, don't you? They just unearth a talent out of nowhere, and he just comes in and he just makes a name for himself. He could be one of those, but I've liked what I've seen of him so far. But from an attacking point of view, you're absolutely right. We are. We don't have enough. We don't have enough up top. And with Messi and Mbappe seemingly on his way out, Neymar's not quite where he needs to be fitness-wise yet. You know, it's going to be another few more weeks, clearly, for him to get anywhere near a level to start a game, certainly a start a competitive game, I feel. So we're in a position where we need to bring enforcements in them very, very quickly, because when you talk about whether you play an attacking pair or an attacking three, they need time to build an understanding. And that's usually what pre-season's for, you know, building an understanding, developing relationship, developing patterns of play. Now, PSG are not going to have that. They've got to kind of come in and hit the ground running, whoever they sign. I'm in the Gonçalo Ramos camp with you when we're talking about strikers who are going to be made available. You know, I know there's been a lot of talk of Harry Kane, but, you know, being an Englishman and living in the UK, there's absolutely no way that Harry Kane's coming to play in Ligue 1. It's not happening. And I also feel if it did, it would be happening for the wrong reasons. He's not going to play at PSG, and I only want players that want to come and play at PSG now. That's what we want. Players that want to come, live in the city, be a part of the city, be a part of the club, and play for the club proudly. You know, he's made his quite clear, wants to go to Bayern, fantastic, go to Bayern, enjoy, no problem. My interest is PSG and having players that are here that want to fight for the shirt, because that's something we haven't had enough of in the last few years, is players that are willing to put everything on the line for the shirt. Gonzalo Ramos is a quality player. I'm actually surprised that there's been absolutely no offers for him. And that's not just this summer, that's previous summer as well. You know, had, as you said, scored the hat-trick, came in for Ronaldo at the World Cup, didn't he? Scored that hat-trick against Switzerland. I don't understand how no one's come in for him. Now, I would love him. Tall, strong, good in the air, can finish. He's got everything that you need in a striker, and he's only going to get better. So he's going to develop, he's going to get better. I think he'd be the perfect player. The only thing that I wouldn't want is for PSG to go cut price. So if they were priced out of a deal for Ramos, again, I wouldn't want Vlahovic, not for me. I think some of the fans have made clear their intentions for other reasons in relation to him coming. So sometimes that can throw a bit of a spanner in there. So I can't see him coming to the club. I don't know. I had a feeling in my head the other day when I was thinking about it and just thinking, you know, in a desperation, at a point of desperation, would PSG go cut price for Romelu Lukaku, who's seemingly got no future anywhere at the moment? And I've sat there and I thought, that would be such a PSG move to do, wouldn't it? Just the last minute to go and get Lukaku for 30, 40 million. So if that happens, then think about this pod, if that ends up happening. But no one's speaking about him, and I'm quite surprised that he hasn't been linked with PSG, who are absolutely in dire need of a striker. Now, would he be my first choice? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, I think we need to build for the future now. We don't need to... I don't think we should be buying a 30-year-old striker. Let's go and buy a 22, 23-year-old striker that's going to have four or five great years with the club and develop himself and push the club to even greater heights. So, yeah, I think a bit of youth now, because we've had an ageing attack, haven't we, for the last two or three years, with the exception of Mbappe, but Neymar lost his pace and, you know, although still a wonderful player, Messi's played as a false nine at times, 35 years old, no pace, you know. We need some pace, we need some youth in that attack now.
If Gonzalo Ramos couldn't happen, what would you think? And this is, by the way, something that I've been quite surprised about, not hearing you mentioned Lukaku. There hasn't been like a mention, but how about Folarin Balakuna? Like, he hasn't really been mentioned. He's an Arsenal player who knows Ligue 1 because he was playing there last season, knows how to score goals in Ligue 1, and as far as I understand, he's not necessarily in the plans for Arsenal for the next season. Do you think that could be something that that we should look into?
This is my honest thoughts on this would be, if you give me the choice out of Balogun, I would like to see Balogun for another season. That was his breakout year, and PSG are in dire need of goals. And he was fantastic at Rams last season. No one can take that away from him. You know, very, very, very prolific in front of goal. But I'd like to see him for another season before gambling and saying, right, this is going to be our number nine now going forward. If you gave me the choice out of Balogun this year or somebody else, if we couldn't make a sign-in, I think I'd rather stick with Ekitike, because it seems like there's something in him this preseason. He looks like a different man. He's like he's gone away. He's licked his wounds. He's got a lot of criticism last season, but he looks really sharp in preseason. I liked his finish the other day, even though, you know, we lost 3-2. Lovely finish. Always looked dangerous. Got himself into some really good positions. Something tells me that we shouldn't give up on this guy. Something tells me that, you know, he really wants to prove himself. And here's the problem. We're so quick at this club to want to get rid of players that want to stay, but we try and persuade people that want to leave to stay. Mm. And here's a guy that he doesn't want to go. He wants to stay, wants to prove himself. He's got ability. There's a lot of clubs that have looked at Ekitike, right? He's not just flash in the pan. There's something about him, his quality. He's had his first year. It was difficult. But I think he's ready now. I think he's ready. Let's integrate him into that first team. I wouldn't like to get rid of him. I think we should keep him. And I think he'll chip in with goals this season. I really do. So we need to, you know, get around those players and kind of, you know, keep those players that really want to stay and fight for Paris Saint-Germain. We're so quick to want to offload them and get rid of these players that want to be here at the club. I don't understand it.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that a lot of our supporters also keep on forgetting is that one of the players who is quite central to our project and has been for the last couple of years is Danilo. And he had a very forgettable first season. Very difficult. Of course, he was thrown into the Leonardo Thomas Tuchel battle of is he a defender? Is he a midfielder? And now he is essentially a defender, and he's one of the best defensive players, certainly last season that we had. But even now, I mean, I know preseason is, they're meaningless matches, but he's really an excellent player. But he wasn't doing so well in his first season, and I think people sometimes forget that that it's not easy to come into a new, not necessarily when Akitike didn't come to a new country. He was already in Ligue 1 and he's a French guy and all that stuff. But nevertheless, to a new system, to a new organization, PSG is not like any other organization, I don't think. I mean, there might be organizations that are bigger or better or whatever, but I don't know if there's another one that is quite like PSG in its own kind of unique way. So I think that it's also worth giving him that grace period, and also the whole context of being behind Messi and Neymar and Mbappe and all the politics around it, and you kind of have to play them and all that stuff. So I think that I agree with you. I really think that he could be somebody. He could be somebody that is making some kind of noise for this team.
And even if he's not, you know, even if we do go out and buy him, go and sign Ramos, for example, he's still be part of the first team picture. He still needs to be a part. We still need that backup striker, that guy who's, you know, for the last few years, we've not had a focal point in the box. You know, we've had three players that have just rotated or, you know, sat, you know, come deep to collect the ball, and there's been nobody in the box. There's been no height. There's been no, you know, we really lack presence in the penalty area. And we need that. We need him. And I think he should be part of the first team this season. And hopefully, I know there's fans that would like to see Akitike go and he's not good enough. But as you said, I think we're so quick to jump to conclusions and to write people off so soon. And, you know, great example of Danilo, one of the most respected players in the squad now. You know, he took a little bit of stick himself at the start. But, you know, he's one of the players that we cherish more, you know, out of that squad now. And someone who's a real Parisian, isn't he? He's a real Parisian now. And we all respect him so highly. So, yeah, I'd like to see Akitike be given another chance.
Yeah, and I think that for both of these players also, it that what you already mentioned, and I think rightly so, is that mentality, that really, that the willingness that you want to be there, you really are passionate about being there and you want to be there. I've said before that if Julian Draxler would have Danilo's mental capacity, he would already have few Ballon d'Ors, but it's just like that it doesn't always match, that you can have great players who are, you know, just having a bit of a, you know, they're just doing this because of whatever, but then you have really what you need are also those players who ideally have both, but player can really upgrade him or herself by just getting by just having that right mentality.
There's
now a lot of winds of change also in the air. There's talk about Marco Verratti being quite open to leave, although certainly not for the fee that is being currently offered. I think from Saudi Arabia it's 30 million, and I don't think that PSG is going to greenlight that deal if there's not going to be, I would imagine that there would have to be quite a lot more money offered. Reportedly, there was also offer for Marquinhos, who wasn't interested in leaving, but this sort of situation is kind of changing many dynamics, and we can talk about that in a moment. But I wanted to ask you before we do that, you know, both of these players, they haven't really been their best selves in a while, in the last even a couple of seasons. And Verratti was having quite a forgettable season. And even when we're thinking about how we went out to Bayern, he was quite in the thick of it, you know, for all those situations where those goals were coming. So then on top of this, we had also Neymar. You were mentioning about Neymar, and of course, he's coming back from an injury. Do you think that Enrique is a coach who could bring these players whom we know their potential? We know they're great players, they're world-class players even, but they haven't been, you know, their best selves. Do you think that Enrique as a coach can bring their best out of them?
obviously, look, he's a Champions League winning manager, and you don't become a Champions League winning manager without having to deal with big egos, without having to make big decisions, without having to make the, you know, decisions that might upset, you know, a few stars. He's certainly somebody who's going to come in. He's not going to phase that dressing room. That's not going to phase him whatsoever. From what I can gather is he will have certainly have the power now, a lot more power than managers like Galtier, maybe people like Unai Emery, maybe even Thomas Tuchel had. So the power's in his hands. And as much as I understand that he's a big fan of Verratti and, you know, certainly wants Verratti to stay at the club. And by the way, I think he will. I don't think he'll leave. I think he'll stay at the club.
I agree.
Verratti will have to improve his football because it's just not been good enough for the last 2 or 3 years. I have a theory as to why. And I'll touch on that in a second. I'll touch on that in a second. Yeah, for him, for Verratti, I think it was a wake-up call. He was previously what we would call one of the untouchables. And obviously, you would have seen the footage from, I think it was back in April, where, you know, fans were chanting for him to get out because they'd had enough. And I think a lot of that was frustration boiling over from just the way the club's been run, the way the club's been treated, Messi suspension, just kind of leaving the club to go to Saudi Arabia. And I think it was just a case of enough's enough. And some of those fans honed in on players that have just been underperforming for what we would say too long a period. You know, you can have seasons that are not as good as others. You can have, you know, spells of form, which just kind of, you're just a little off the pace a little bit. But his has been for too long, unfortunately. You know, too many yellow cards. Assists have dried up. We don't look for goals for Marco Verratti. We don't even look for shots for Marco Verratti. But just his general performance, a lot of errors, you know, even in the last game of the season against Clermont, you was there, you know, really horrible errors, just not Marco Verratti at all for one of their goals. But I, as I said to you earlier, I've got a bit of a theory on this, and it alludes to his lifestyle. And we know that, you know, that's the easy answer. I think we all can kind of put two and two together and get four on this one. But Marco Verratti, his lifestyle has changed significantly. And I'm trying not to be disrespectful in any way, shape or form when I say this. But since he got married to his supermodel girlfriend, and his lifestyle has changed hugely from the Marco Verratti of family man with his ex-girlfriend to Marco Verratti living the life of a the partner of a supermodel. And Marco Verratti's, for anybody that doesn't know, he's married to Jessica Aidi, and she is a supermodel, and she lives the life of a supermodel. So there's jet setting, there's parties, there's very much, you know, if there's an event on, she's there, and Marco's there with her. And Marco's lifestyle off the pitch has changed hugely in the last few years, which has coincided with being with Jessica, marrying Jessica. And I've found that his form has dipped hugely since he got married to Jessica. Now, I apologize to anyone that might feel like I'm being disrespectful, prying into somebody's relationship, but there is definitely a correlation there between his poor form, his lifestyle change, and his marriage.
There's certainly a correlation, and whether it's causation, that's also a good question. It could be my theory. I had also a theory about this, which is slightly different, but I'm not discounting what you're saying, because it is true that before they were like one set of VIP tickets to Verratti himself, but now there's like two sets, so one or the other is going to get the invite to every event that there is, and possibly both of them. But what I felt is that Verratti was, of course, in awe of Messi when he came there, and of course, you know, was always incredibly outspoken about how he admires Messi, and that's not particularly unusual, because a lot of people do, and a lot of football players do, and all that stuff. But somehow it felt to me that, do you remember when Neymar and Mbappe first came, and people were saying that Neymar is a bad influence on Mbappe, that he's teaching Mbappe the wrong things and all that, and I felt that much more than that happening, it was that Messi was teaching Verratti, like, there, because I don't know, Messi didn't come across as somebody who really cared very much about PSG. He was there to do a job, a kind of like a professional job, but he didn't have any particular passion for the for this project or anything like that. He was just there for the time being and getting the money and keeping his World Cup dream alive for Argentina and all of that stuff. And I felt like Verratti kind of like who had been there. And Verratti always was a big fan of Zlatan and still is. And he was like, he's been even in interviews been talking about how he's kind of like reminiscing of the good old days when there was leadership, but he doesn't realize that he's the guy who needs to be the leadership now. He's one of the people. He's like an elder in that locker room, and he needs to take responsibility, and he needs to be one of those leaders, and that doesn't seem to come naturally. Of course, people have different personalities and characteristics. That's normal, but I felt like, you know, not discounting your theory, but I felt like Messi was actually a little bit of a bad influence on Verratti because it was a kind of energy that he just sort of like tacked along with.
Yeah, and I take your point, and yeah, certainly could well be some truth in that, but certainly an interesting observation. Sadly, Verratti hasn't stepped up to be the leader he should and could have been. 30 years old, you know, most appearances, the highest appearance maker at the club. Now, is he?
Certainly
out the current team.
Yes.
He's got more than Marquinhos, yeah.
Only a handful more, and they are both, like, I think less than 20 behind the all-time record.
Yeah.
They're very close.
So at this point, you expect him to kind of, you know, really take a lead, be the dressing room leader now, him and Marquinhos. And I'm not sure we either are. I'm not just going to throw this on Verratti. I'm not sure Marquinhos is the leader that's needed with this crop of players either. And I know that there's obviously a lot of fans who've got their own opinions in terms of, you know, who should be the captain. I don't believe right now there is too many candidates out there if he was ever going to take it from Marquinhos. I know that Skriniar has been a captain for Inter Milan, but again, he's been here for a few weeks. Do you throw a captaincy on somebody who's been at the club in a few weeks? Probably not. Doesn't speak French. I don't think he speaks French, and I'm assuming he doesn't, and he's learning. I think that's obviously really important that he gets a grasp of that first. I can't see Marquinhos losing the captaincy, but I do think that this team, as you quite rightly said, really lacks leaders. There's not enough in there. There's no, you know, there's no Matuidis anymore. There's no Thiago Mottas, Maxwell, Thiago Silva, you know, all those players that we had, Ibrahimovic, Cavani. We had 7-8 leaders in our starting 11 at one point. And they're not there now. And that's a problem. That's been a problem, an ongoing problem. So we'll see what this next crop brings. I do think PSG are going to go for a difficult phase. I hope they win Ligue 1. If you were speaking to me a year ago, it will be when we win Ligue 1. I hope we win it this season. I really do. We might have been helped by the fact that Lens have lost two of their best players, because I really think that they've got so much momentum to build on. But I think there's a bit of a cleanup job for PSG now. And we're cleaning up from 2021, which some people thought that was the greatest transfer window of all time. There was Hakimi, Donnarumma, Messi, Wijnaldum, Sergio Ramos. Yeah. It was actually, for me, probably the worst transfer window we've had, because what it did is it upset the dynamics of the club. It upset the dynamics of the team. We had players who were, you remember the photos yourself, they were all out having meals together. They were out the pot, you know, whenever they went in, they had parties, they were doing group photos. And after that transfer window, what we then started to have was them breaking into smaller cliques. And it really broke the harmony of the team, that transfer window did. And it's never been the same since. You know, Mbappe and Neymar went their separate ways. It became Neymar and Messi, Mbappe and Hakimi. Mm-hmm. And then we started to really kind of break off into small little cliques. And you could see that on the pitch, because that actually transcended to the pitch. And you could see there wasn't real, that unity that was there on the pitch that got us to the Champions League final had just evaporated a year later. It had gone. So those dynamics and that cohesion off the pitch had gone. And you could see it on the pitch, and we still haven't had it back. So there's a cleanup job, I think, for that, from that transfer window that, for me, really set the tone for the next 2 years of what we've seen, which has been below average football, poor performances, underwhelming results, two Champions League round of 16 exits. We've struggled, but I think we've struggled, and I think it starts with the team dynamics and that cohesion, which has unfortunately seeped out of the team.
Yeah, I think so. And I remember you were talking about that transfer window that we were all so excited about at the time. And when they were presented these new players at Parc des Princes, and they were wearing the white T-shirt and whatever, and you had all these players in the row. And the funny thing about that is that the same transfer window, although it was originally a loan deal for a year, Nuno Mendes came. And now if you're looking back, like, he's by far the most exciting player to have come that summer to Paris. But yet he wasn't even on that podium when these players were presented. So that's life. Sometimes it happens like that. And you were talking about a little bit about Neymar already. But let's you know, get into a little bit more detail. I mean, we kind of think that, okay, Neymar needs to get back into fitness. And it's true that he quite literally, because he's recovering from an injury and from an operation. Well, that operation promised us that it's going to make his foot more durable. It shouldn't be getting so easily injured after this. Of course, we don't know. And if there's going to be some mad sliding tackle from behind us, there tends to be, you know, it's not going to endure absolutely everything. But, you know, that's the promise, that it should be a little bit more. And last season, Neymar was actually really great for the matches that he played. The problem with him has always been the amount of matches that he's not playing. But missing almost half the season, he was still actually, and this to me is really remarkable, he was the second best assist provider in Ligue 1, even though he missed very large chunk of the season. And I was checking today, he was 14th best top scorer also in the Ligue 1 with the same kind of thing. So he really had a very good early part of the season. Of course, then he wasn't playing towards the end. And with him, it's always been that availability. That's the problem. But his numbers per minutes played or matches played are actually quite insane in Paris. What is your, like, do you think this is going to be his season? Now there's a coach that knows him from a slightly different period of his life and his career as well, you know, from Barcelona when he was in a slightly different situation. So do you think that Enrique can bring the best out of Neymar once he gets, of course, healthy and ready to play again?
Well, I'll just start off by saying I was probably in the camp of people that never ever thought Neymar was going to leave the club. His contract's too big. He wants to stay. Of course he does, because he's got another 4 years and a huge whopping salary. Why would he leave? But on the flip side, he wants to stay. Okay? Through everything he's been thrown at him from the fans, coming to his house, whether you love me or whether you don't, yes, okay, I've got a big salary, but I want to stay at the club. I want to win the Champions League here. It's been a really tough time for Neymar at PSG. When he's been on form, he's just been an absolute joy to watch. But unfortunately, we don't see it enough. And that's where the frustrations lie. Nobody doubts his talent. Nobody doubts how good he is. Nobody doubts his quality. What people doubt is his fitness and his reliability. And if PSG are going to move forward, they need somebody who they can rely on in the business end of the season. Okay, someone who's going to be there in Champions League semi-finals, in Champions League quarter-finals. Someone who's going to drag PSG to those latter stages, because that's what he was signed for. Now, in terms of my opinion on him, I will never give up on Neymar. I will never give up on him, because there is an incredibly talented generational footballer there. And for him and for his talent, I would love for him, even if he never wins a Ballon d'Or, and he probably won't, I would love for him to drag this team to the Champions League. I would love it more than anything, because that's what his talent deserves. I just hope that this fitness can get him over the line. I think Luis Enrique will be certainly a positive thing for him. It's no surprise to see him ahead of the game in terms of his recovery. It was muted that it would be more like September, but here he is. He's almost making his return, you know, on this tour. And I think he wants to get down to action. I think he wants to prove to Luis Enrique that he can still got so much to offer. I think Luis Enrique is hopeful that he can still get some of that same Neymar that won the Champions League with him in 2015 in Barcelona. But for me, he's on such a huge deal. I spoke to a good friend of mine, you know, at the end of last season, and his words to me were, I hope Neymar's not here next season. Mm-hmm. Season ticket holder at PSG, and I just can't agree with him. I want Neymar there. I'd never give up on Neymar. I'd hate to see him in another shirt. Do you know, in some ways, it would be a more of a tough loss, PSG selling Neymar than selling Mbappe, for me. It would, because he's such a fantastic player, and I was so enthused when he signed in 2017. That was more of an exciting signing than Mbappe for me. He's such a, you know, you can't dislike him. He's such a lovable guy, smile on his face. And when he's happy and when he's fit, there's nobody better than him. Technically, there is nobody on his level in world football. On a technical level, nobody can touch Neymar in world football. He just needs a break from these injury issues, and we need to see him fit and firing. Messi's gone, distraction gone. Mbappe could be going, another distraction gone. Mm-hmm. We spoke earlier about captains, didn't we? We spoke about captains. We need now somebody who can take this club on, who's willing to take this club on, who wants to be here, everybody will respect and look up to, and someone who can go and win you a Champions League, win you the league titles, win you all these cups. That's Neymar, but that's a fit Neymar. And I'm hoping and I'm praying that this operation is going to take him to the next level, and we can see the Neymar finally that we spent £200 million on. In English money, of course, but yes. 200 million, 222 million euros, that hopefully we can see him. I'm hopeful. I'll never give up on him. I'm hopeful. Always.
I'm also, I share your optimism. I'm an eternal optimist when it comes to that. And when it comes to him also, I think that as a football player, not, you know, like, I think as a person there, you know, it doesn't strike me as the best, but as a football player, he is a joy to watch, and he is like he's really phenomenal. And I think there is a point that you are making about this captaincy. And I know a lot of PSG fans wouldn't even necessarily accept him as a captain because he said things like that. We've had a volatile relationship with him. You know, things have been said both ways. Things have been said and all that. And I think that there's also a fair point when they went to his house and whatever, and he had just been injured. Like he had, what you're going to do if you're injured? You can't, you know, you can't play when you're injured. So, But the way he's been playing, even where he was playing for Brazil in the World Cup in December, he was pretty single-handedly. I mean, that team is full of star power. Like almost every position is like a world-class player in Brazil. And yet Neymar is like the one that is trying to drag them forward while everybody else is making a mistake or struggling to finish or whatever. And Neymar is the one who is trying to get them through. And then his sort of like midfield and defense gives up and they are knocked out from the tournament, which I'm sure was also a big disappointment for him. But what a player he is. And he is a player that can change absolutely anything and any match he can change. So I'm really with you. I think that he could be somebody. And if he was given the captain's armband, I don't think that would be the worst thing. I understand there's resistance to that. But I think that at the moment, I don't know if Danilo is going to be starter enough for him to take it. But
no,
I'm not sure either. But I think that with Neymar, he's a starter when he's fit. So it's a complicated question. And of course, you have to also consider that taking an armband away from Marquinhos, that could go either way. Like that could also be a big blow for him.
Yeah, it could cause a lot of problems. It could cause, again, issues in terms of his performances. You know, he slowly starting to show signs of finding his form again as we got towards the end of the season. Hopefully he'll have a much better, stronger season this summer. We've seen his Instagram posts of him doing all his indoor sprinting and all of his training. And that's his way of saying, guys, I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm going to put the past behind me. Look, he said a few things that have, you know, really, ruffled the feathers of PSG fans. Marquinhos has, you know, in the past. Verratti has. So is Neymar. They've all said things, you know, that have really rattled the feathers of certain members of the CUP and certain fans of Paris Saint-Germain. And look, it's not as if, you know, the fans haven't given it them, you know, they've done their bit as well, you know. And as you said, I think the best word is to describe it is volatile. It has been, but there's no reason why nobody, you know, the players can't put that behind them. The players and the fans can't put it behind them for the greater good now. And it's time to stop the hostilities on you know, in the stadium, stop the hostilities and the booing of the players. And, you know, it's time now for the club and the fans to come together and unify, because, you know, this is hopefully going to be the dawning of a new era at the club. When I'm assuming Mbappe leaves and Messi's gone, and we can start to build a balanced club and just get some harmony between the players and the fans, because it hasn't been there. Everybody's just in different directions. Everybody's, again, I talked to you earlier about the cohesion of the team and everybody kind of going off into their own pockets. It's a bit the same with the fans as well. There's so much separation between the fans and the players. And, you know, we really need everybody to come together this season now. Put the past behind them, put the squabbles and the arguments and the disagreements and put everything behind them and all come together, because that's the only way in which this club's going to go forward, this club's going to be taken seriously, and this club's going to have the best chance of getting that elusive Champions League. I'm not saying it's going to happen this season. I would love it, because the final's at Wembley and I would love that for that to happen. But, you know, it's hard to see that happen. Happening this year. But, you know, as long as the club are building in the right direction, you know, I'll take that this season. Just move in the right direction, build towards a better future.
I really agree with you. We've been covering now PSG pretty much from all angles. We've been talking about the whole Mbappe situation, which is complicated and continues to be. We've been talking about the transfer, the new coach and manager. We've been talking about the players who have come in and the players who are in form and who are not in form, and what our hopes and dreams and aspirations for the next season. Before we leave and end this episode, I wanted to talk to you about one last thing, and that's not directly, strictly about PSG, but it's about football more in general. The Saudi Arabia situation has been really coming to play this summer, and a lot of players have been going there. There's a lot of money involved. We're not quite sure what the level of play is going to be there. Is it going to be more like a retirement league? But then at the same time, there is also a lot of quite young people, you know, decent players going there. And of course, money is a big, you know, it's a bait for people to go there. They, you know, and it's difficult for me to say to somebody that don't go and take millions and tens of millions or whatever. If you are able to do that, that's life changing, not just for you and but for of course everybody around you. At the same time, of course, Saudi Arabia is a complicated country. Human rights issues, you know, climate change is happening. It's one of the big polluters, oil money. Well, you know, we could talk about Qatar also. But what's your take on this whole Saudi Arabia situation as it has arisen, this, especially this summer?
Yeah, Saudi Arabia for me is not going anywhere. They're here to stay, and they're huge barrels of money are going to keep enticing players to the Saudi League. It's going to be the Premier League, which has kind of been a monopoly in terms of finances and, you know, and prize money and the way in which they've, you know, commercially used their league. They've got, when it comes to, certainly on a financial standpoint, they've got a little bit of competition now. And I think there's a reason why Saudi are targeting Premier League players, mainly. It's almost a ploy to say, guys, we're here. We're not afraid of you. We will take your players. You are the Premier League. You are the big kind of Leviathan. You are the big, huge league in world football. And we're going to challenge you because we've got an absolute bottomless pit of wealth, and we can take your players from you. And it's very, very interesting dynamics. It's also very interesting to see now the British media, or certainly the English media, are dealing with it, which is not very good. A lot of criticism being aimed, which some of it is very hypocritical, in my opinion, and it's very quite interesting to see how in England they're very much squirming around it. They're very turning their nose up. They're very uncomfortable with it. I think the key to it is not like China. China was a bit of a flash in the pan, but you felt that at the time. You felt that it was kind of going to come up, it's going to peak, and then it's going to drop off quite quickly. USA, and you've got MLS, and again, felt like it was very much a retirement home to begin with. And there's still an element of that now. But no, Saudi are picking up plays in the peak of their careers. And this is why it's such an interesting dynamic. But Saudi are going nowhere and they're here to stay. And I think it's only going to be a matter of time before the TV deals start to, get secured. And we're starting to have Saudi League TV, Saudi League games on our televisions because, it's not a case of these stars that we've grown up watching or watching the Premier League or around Europe. And we're going to still be able to see them in action playing for these teams because, let's be honest, some of these Saudi teams have got better attack. You've got Al Ahly, who Sir Maximan, Firmino, and they've got Riyad Mahrez.
Mm.
So, I mean, there's Premier League teams, there's League One teams, there's Champions Leagues that would take that forward line. This is very, very interesting. Our players are not afraid to go there. Well, if you want to say they've got a better forward line than PSG, then I'm not saying I would disagree with you. That's what I'm saying. But there is some really, really talented footballers who are nowhere near the end of their careers that are saying, okay, I'm going to give up my opportunity of playing in Europe's top league, playing in the Champions League, and I'm going off to Saudi Arabia. I'm going to safeguard my family's financial future, and I'm going to go and play in a league that's growing, and I'm going to go live in a hot country and nice weather and all of that. Obviously, there's plenty of other issues that surround Saudi Arabia, as you've touched on quite rightly. But this is going to go for a little while because you've got Saudi taking over the Gulf now, the LIV Gulf. We've got Saudi's interest in boxing, wrestling events, all types of sports events now. And the next thing is to take it into football. And who knows in the future, would they speak to UEFA about potentially? I know I'm getting ahead of myself here, but you and I know when it comes to UEFA, money talks. And Saudi Arabia is not that far away from, the southeastern tip of Europe. So my point is watch this space with them because they're going nowhere.
Yeah, no, I think that you have a very good point. And of course, there is that financial fair play question that then could they be in the Champions League or other competitions because of lack of that. But I think it's very interesting, especially to hear your views on that, because now we are used to Premier League coming to France, to Ligue 1, perhaps other leagues also, but especially to Ligue 1 and taking the best and brightest of the promises from various different clubs and teams. And now it's happening also in the English soil. So tables have turned a little bit, I guess.
Oh, very much so, yeah. And as I said at the start, the fact that they've gone directly for Premier League players is their way of saying, hey, we're not afraid of you. We're not afraid of the big leagues. We're coming and we're going to come and cherry pick your players and we're going to take your players. And so far, they've done pretty well. They've done a pretty good job of it.
Thank you so much, Lee, for your time, for your views, for all the thoughts that you have given us. It's been very very interesting conversation, and I always enjoy hearing from you and what your take on is of this beloved PSG.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Always great to speak to you. And thanks very much for having me on.
That is all for now. Once more, a huge thanks to Lee Davey. He's one of those people who have a very sharp analysis of our club and what's happening around it. So it's absolutely a pleasure to always hear his views. Next, we will have a match in Tokyo against Inter Milan, the runners-up of Champions League from a few months ago, and then a brief visit to South Korea with a friendly match there before the season starts at Parc des Princes on Saturday, 12th of August against Lorient. The team should be ready by then, and hopefully much of the indecision and uncertainty of the summer is behind us by then. We keep our ears on these PSG streets and eyes on the ball. Next time more. My name is Mikko. This is PSG Review, and talk to you soon again. But until that, peace. Peace.